Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Kathy Kay and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, February 23rd, 2017. Today we are reading from the Big Book and we are on page 9, the very first full paragraph, which begins, "The door opened and he stood there." Today's readers are Leslie M. reading the 12 Steps, Esther F. reading the 12 Traditions, and reading the text are Carolyn S. H., Hoodie R., and Katie G. The reference numbers for Wednesday, February 22nd, are 7 a.m. meeting 9645, and 10 a.m. meeting 9646. Our newcomer greeter today is Amanda R., and Nadia will be moderating the second hour. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no fees or dues for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors, and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition, states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that the people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Leslie M. to read the 12 steps of OA.
Good morning, Kathy K. Thank you for your service. This is Leslie M., a recovered compulsive overeater. The 12 steps. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for allowing me to do service, and I pass.
Thank you, Leslie M. And Esther F., could you please read our 12 traditions of OA?
Good morning. This is Esther F., a recovered compulsive overeater from Cleveland, Ohio. The 12 steps, 12 traditions. Number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend an OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible for those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. And 12, anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personality. Thank you for letting me do service, and I pass.
Thank you, Esther F. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinent requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book on page 9, the first full paragraph, and I will ask Carolyn S.H. to get us started.
Hi, good morning, Kathy. Good morning, everybody. Carolyn S.H., a grateful recovered compulsive eater in Massachusetts. The door opened and he stood there, fresh skinned and glowing. There was something about his eyes. He was inexplicably different. What had happened? I pushed a drink across the table. He refused it. Disappointed but curious, I wondered what had gotten into the fellow. He wasn't himself. Come, what's this all about? I queried. He looked straight at me. Simply but smilingly, he said, I've got religion. I was aghast. So that was it. Last summer, an alcoholic crackpot, now I suspected, a little cracked about religion. He had that starry-eyed look. Yes, the old boy was on fire, all right, but bless his heart, let him rant. Besides, my gin would last longer than his preaching. Well, I think this is really a fun passage to get to speak on. I feel really privileged. Here, let me start my timer. This is the kind of moment, the beginning of the moment where AA was born, pretty much, where Ebby is, Bill greets Ebby at the door, Ebby Thatcher, and I can just picture this. I mean, obviously, I didn't know these men, but I can just picture Ebby standing there with this smirk on his face. And I've been asking myself, like, why would he use that word? Why would he use the word, I've got religion? Like, he didn't, you know, say, I found the answer, or I'm sober. I mean, you probably said that earlier. But why the word religion? And I came up with two possible reasons, because he did come from the Oxford group and they were very, like, that's where he had done those original six steps that later Bill created into 12 steps. But I also think there's a little bit of kind of sarcasm in his voice. I don't know. That's how I picture it, because he knows how Bill's going to react to it. And Bill's reaction is exactly as the alcoholic reaction, the addict reaction. And the moment he hears the word religion, he's thinking he's going to rant, he's going to preach at me, there's nothing I want to hear. I know from experience and being on both sides of the whole preaching coin, it does not work. And we see later in working with others, that is never about preaching. It's always about identifying in and identifying and telling one story. And I looked up the word, let's see. So Bill also talked about there was something in his eyes. He mentions his eyes twice. And the second time he mentions his eyes, Evie's eyes, he says he had that starry-eyed look. And I looked up starry-eyed, and it said overly romantic or idealistic. And that's how, like, carrying that kind of message, like this idealistic, not connected, religious kind of preachy message, doesn't work. And what we'll see on page 12 is when Ebby says that wonderful sentence about why don't you choose your own conception of God, then everything shifts and everything changes. To me, that is the absolute bedrock of this whole program, of Bill's recovery, and then it became of the whole program, is the ability, my time is going off, the ability to choose one's own conception of God and not have to buy into anyone else's conception of God. And I think that's all I'm going to say. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Carolyn S.H. Who would like to share on this?
Chrissy.
Barbara.
Tina F.
Katie G. from Boston.
Melissa C.
Kim G.
Okay, let me tell you who I have so far. I have Chrissy, and I didn't get your last initial. Tina S., Katie G., Kim G., Melissa C. I'll take one more.
Barbara B. R.
Okay, Barbara R.
Barbara B.
Barbara B. Okay, I'm going to stop there. Monica, I'll put you down for the next round. Thank you. Okay, Chrissy, please go ahead. Did I hear Chrissy? Maybe I heard
is
that.
Chrissy?
Okay, good. Yes, go ahead, Chrissy.
Thank you. Hi, this is Chrissy, recovered in New Jersey. Religion, to me, I think that there was such a negative connotation back then, you know, as there is now. And I loved what was just shared, and I agree. And it's fun to think about what context it was given in. But I honestly think that it was the difference, like in the big book, when we hear different words used back then, they meant something different. They have different connotations now, and religion is like a dirty word, unfortunately, now, because of a lot of different reasons, because there's a lot of wars that, you know, break out because of religion, and it's blamed for a lot of ills in the world. If he were to say today, you know, I got spirituality or something, the whole idea of what happened to him and that I feel like is lost sometimes in translation nowadays is that it is a spiritual program. It is a spiritual answer. You know, I think about that a lot. And I hear people share about the fact that there's not a spiritual part of the program, that it is a spiritual program. And I think that's so important, you know, and I think that we have to be careful not to scare people off when they first come, especially if they're atheists or agnostics, to talk about the fact that it's spiritual, but there's a less of an emphasis on God when you think about spirituality, because even in certain practices like in yoga and things like that, they talk about spirituality, different parts of the self that really aren't religious based, but more, you know, new age type of thinking, that we are to acknowledge the fact that we do have different parts of ourselves that aren't just physical and cognitive. But I honestly love the idea of the fact that he said, like, I picture him just sitting there beaming, like, I got religion, like, I found the answer. This is the answer to all our problems. And it is, and I found it to be so. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Chrissy. Tina S., please go ahead.
Thanks, Kathy, for your service. Tina S., recovered compulsive eater, anorexic in Florida. You know, I too really appreciated the share and could certainly relate. And, you know, I had to laugh when we read this today, because when I came in, you know, my Abby didn't say I got religion, but certainly shared that they were spiritual. And I interpreted it as I got religion. And therefore, you know, I was raised in a religion. Not that I was practicing in it by any means, or did I even believe it, but I thought, well, I got this made now, you know, I believe in God. And, you know, one of the things was I was so closed-minded, and, you know, I certainly believed there was a God, whatever that meant, but not that he would be working in my life. And when I liked it, you know, I liked this, that the door opened and he stood there, fresh-skinned and glowing. You know, so for me, and absolutely what was shared, you know, it is about the attraction and not the promotion today, you know, and when people look at me that way and they have that something different about their eyes, and when they are inexplicably, which I can't explain, different, you know, I want to know what happened, you know, and so therefore, you know, I became a little more open-minded, a little more willing to just listen to what this woman had to share with me, and you know, one day at a time, you know, I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. And I never had believed that before. So I thought, let's give it a shot, you know, and I'm really grateful that we're on this chapter, some great stuff. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Tina S. Katie G., please go ahead.
Excuse me, Kathy K., can you hear me? It's Katie G.
Yes.
Hey, good morning, Kathy K., starting my timer, recovered, Katie G., from Boston, anorexic, bulimic, recovered. Hey, if you're banging around your pots and pans, we can hear you. Hang on 1 second. Please mute. Thanks. All right. So loved hearing my teachers. Thanks, guys. It was great to hear you. The thing that I really related to is, like, so I remember coming in, and I remember this woman. I had known her in college when I was severely anorexic, and I didn't recognize her. She had been 300 pounds at the time and assigned to tell me to go home from college because of my eating disorder. And when I saw her again, you know, I didn't recognize her, and she told me about OA. And I love the smug superiority of my addiction that I relate to. Like, you know, like, here's this amazing woman, right? And then now I suspect a little cracked about religion, right? Like, I see this fire in her belly, and I see the physical but also the spiritual. Like, her eyes are on fire. Like, she's telling me all this stuff. But then I'm like, you know what? She's not eating flour and sugar. Come on. She's a little cracked. She's got the God stuff. I don't know what's going on. You know, thank God. You know, like, looking down at her. Like, here I am, binging my brains out, not able to stop, you know, leaving work, literally, because I can't, you know, I can't do anything but eat, and I'm looking down on her. And the same thing when I first heard people in Boston talking about the Big Book. Like, oh, my gosh. Like, it was this amazing mix of, like, oh, my gosh, I want what they have. But then, oh, I hate myself so much, I could never get it. So, you know what, like, they're a little cracked. Like, let them do their thing. I'm not so sure I'm going to put my toe in the water. You know, and meanwhile, I'm dying, right? Like, I'm telling myself, that because of the things that, because of my behaviors and my sex conduct, that I could, that no one could ever love me. Like, here I am, an abstinent woman, and dating and trying to, like, move on with my life, but I didn't have God, not the way I have God today, because I didn't have the steps, right? I had not had a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps. So I kept looking for people to accept me and tell me I was okay, and guess what? That can't be found. I did a lot of research, it can't be found. So I just, I really love this, like seeing an answer, but not quite being sure that this is going to work for me. And praise God. Like, thank you, God, for all of you who have that fire in your belly, that star-eyed look, who tell me, you know, who share with me your answer, who say, Katie, I have been where you are, and I'm not there anymore, whether it be with your food, with your exercise addiction, your anorexia, your bulimia, your relationship status. You all walked away, and you show me a day at a time how not just to live without the food, but how to live in a recovered state of mind and body. And I have to continue to do this and continue to pursue God through the work of the 12 steps and, most importantly, entire abstinence with those 12 steps. And I'm going to continue doing this with you guys one day at a time. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Katie G. Kim G., please go ahead.
Good morning. Good morning, all. My name is Kim G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from South Jersey. I've got religion. You know, this is the approach that Eddie has. And I have to say, this is the approach that Bill used the first 6 months after he had his spiritual awakening. He tried to go out to people and tell them about this white light experience he's going to have in the hospital. And he has no success. And he comes back to Dr. Silkworth and he says, you know, what's going on here? I can't help any of these alcoholics. And he said to him, you know what? You're telling them about an experience they can't relate to. You know, my suggestion is hit them with the medical business and hit them with it hard. Hit them with what the problem is, because otherwise they won't care what the solution is. So Eddie is there, and he's not telling, Eddie doesn't even know about the problem. So why is Eddie there? Eddie's there because part of this Oxford group is that he has to go out and testify to what the Oxford group did. And he did it begrudgingly from what I've read in the history. So why does this work? This is where I really feel the hand of the universe, the hand of God, whatever you believe in has come in. Because if Eddie had said, I'm not doing it, where would you go? Cebu Graves, you go, or any other names that Harlan knows that I don't know, I don't think this would have happened. Because they would have been saying, I've got religion, and Bill would have said, screw you. But see, what was different with Eddie, even though Eddie didn't understand it, was that Bill knew that Eddie was just like him. Bill could not argue with the fact that, Eddie, you don't know what I'm going through. You don't understand. Because Eddie drank like Bill drank, and Bill witnessed that. In fact, I've often heard that Bill said, if I get as bad as Eddie, I'm going to do something about this drinking. And I heard that Eddie said, if I get as bad as Bill, I'm going to do something about this drinking. So this is what is so beautiful. This is the approach that Eddie used that doesn't work with other people because we have to know what the problem is. You know what it says? My gin lasted longer than his preaching. Bill is saying here, my solution of gin is the only thing I know, and this crackpot idea of religion isn't going to work. And I remember this when I see this, what I think of is being 23 years old in my bubblegum pink birthday, my bedroom when I was a kid, in my Holly Hobby furniture, binging my brains out and having a light knock on the door as my mother, who's been in OA since I was 11, comes in. And I remember her hands shaking, and I remember her reading off this paper and saying, get the hell out of my room, Mom. I have binge foods underneath these covers that I need to get back to. And it wasn't until years later that I realized that she was reading me her beginner's meeting from her meeting because she was so scared for me. But I couldn't hear it from my mother. I couldn't. So when the food pummeled me enough, my mother living a life of recovery made me at least know that Overeaters Anonymous was out there, and I went to a meeting and I could hear it from other people the way I couldn't hear it from my mother. And with that, I'm going to pass.
Thank you, Kim G. Melissa C., please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, Kathy. Are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Hi, good morning. It's Melissa C., recovered compulsive overeater from New York, but in Florida right now. You know, it made me think for me about those first meetings when people spoke about God, you know, my earliest meetings that I went to, and oh my, it made me crazy. You know, it really aggravated me. I hated God. I hated talk about God. Anyone who had that kind of faith, you know, I viewed as ignorant, uneducated, inferior. You know, that's how full of myself I was. And I just wanted the diet. You know, please give me the diet. And yet their talk of a higher power that does for them and was doing for them what they could not do for themselves, that made sense, you know. When I saw them and they were slim, you know, because weight was everything to me, and smiling, and they seemed peaceful and happy and content, you know, I listened, I heard the shares, people telling their experiences, you know, when the focus got on the experiences, how they did what they did, they ate the way I ate, they hid food, they binged alone, they ate way past hunger and right until and through, and it was painful, you know, and clearly they knew what they were talking about. And what began to sink in was, who am I not to listen? You know, I was there after all. I'm looking to be helped. Otherwise, what would I be doing there? And, you know, did I completely come to understand and embrace this higher power? You know, not at first. That's a process, you know. And today, like at meetings, when I see newcomers come, and our conversation is way too God-focused, you know, or almost bragging how great we're doing today, like how wonderful everything is today, that's when we seem a little cracked and crazy about the solution. And I think, like, we risk losing them, you know. And so we really are directed. What's way more effective? Focusing on where we've been. Identification of the problem. You know, yeah, showing our fat pictures. You know, telling our ugly part of the story, because that's when we have the ability to really make an impact, you know, and then what we have to say has depth and weight. And thank you. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Melissa C. Barbara B., please go ahead.
Thank you. This is Barbara B., recovered compulsive reader from Massachusetts, calling in from Florida. Every time I read this passage and I read the fact that he looked me straight, he looked straight at me, simply but smilingly, he said, I've got religion. It takes me back to many years ago when one of my many attempts to deal with this horrible, horrible returning addiction to eating and in a completely disastrous life, I just, one of the things I tried, because I had read fasting can save your life, was I would go off to the equivalent, as I see it, of my town's hospital. I'd go off to Rhinebeck, New York. We were living in New York City at the time. And I would go on this, quote, hygienic retreat. I'd attempt to dry out, and I would live on water. They'd slowly break the fast and education, all the rest, and I would stop the allergy. I was not, of course, aware of the phenomenon of craving or any of that. But the problem was, I very often, despite my life and my heart being at stake, I would binge on the way home after 3 weeks of fasting and drinking water and figuring I'm done, because I couldn't deal with reentering my life. So I kept going back and going back. And the director, one day after yet another return to try to, quote, dry out, said to me, and he was not a religious or spiritual man at all, and I was a religious practitioner, that is the religion of ritual and service, not of the heart. And he said to me, Barbara, maybe you need to get religion. It was a shock coming from this person. And whenever I hear Ebby at that table saying to Bill, I've got religion, I'm taken back. It shook me. I didn't know what he was talking about, because how could he, who is not a religious practitioner, say that to me? Well, I didn't get it, but now I get it. Because if religion is truly spiritual and moral, and with a practical plan of action, holding one together, then that's what the religion really is. It's the real thing. So I'm thankful for his attempt to shock me, because he wasn't a 12-step person, but somehow he could see that that was a part of me that was needed and missing. So I'm thankful for him being an Ebbe that kind of prepared me for what was to come. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Barbara D. Monica T., please go ahead.
Good morning, Kathy. Good morning, everyone. My name is Monica T. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Florida. Yeehaw! Oh, my God. Here we are. Ebbe shows up at the door. He's fresh-skinned. He's glowing. There's something about his eyes. And Bill's going, oh, my God, what is going on here? Then he offers him a drink, and he refuses it. What? What? What is going on? What's all this about? I queried. I asked. And then Ebbe looks at him. Simply and smilingly, he says, I got religion. Oh, my God. I don't know about you, but being Vermont-born and bred like Ebbe and Bill, tell me you got religion, and I can just feel the hair standing up on my neck. Oh, my God, you're not going to start telling me what to do or believe or think. I was aghast. I was shocked. So that was it. Last summer, an alcoholic crackpot, a lunatic, a nut. Now I suspected a little crazy about religion. And he has that starry-eyed, unrealistic, over-enthusiastic look. Yes, the old boy was on fire, all right, but bless his pea-picking little heart. Let him preach. I got enough gin to outdo him. So right away, Bill here, you know, he's been drinking for 3 weeks, nonstop, day and night. And he knows Ebbe. You know, they're way back. They grew up. They lived in Vermont together. They went to school together. They did a lot of serious drinking together. And he knows Ebby's a real bottom drunk. And he's never seen Ebbe sober in a long, long time. And Ebbe shows up at the door, and he just opens the door, and there's something different about Ebbe. There's some type of change. And then he tells him he's not drinking. And then he's telling him he's got religion. And I forgot to turn my timer over, so please catch me on that. So, and then he tells him he's got religion. Ooh. And Bill, you know, it's just amazing. But Bill sees there's something different about him. He sees it. He feels it. And you know, it makes it quite an impression on him, even in his drunkenness here. And, you know, those recovered people did the same for me. There was something about them. And I'd gotten to the point where I was sick and tired of being sick and tired, and I wanted what they had. And we'll hear the rest of the story. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Monica T. Who else would like to share on this passage?
Leah S.
Amanda R.
Larry.
Leah M.
Buddy R.
Vasa O.
Jessica A.
Okay, wait a second. Leia M. Vasa O. I missed somebody in there. I have Leia S., Amanda R., Larry K., Leia M., Vasa O. Who else?
Rivka A.
Hoodie R.
Rivka, oh, that's it. Hoodie R. I'm sorry, Hoodie. I'm going to put you right after Leia M., because I heard you earlier. Okay, let's stop with that. And Leah S., please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Can I be heard?
Yes.
Okay. This is Leah S., a recovered compulsive overeater from Brooklyn, New York. I'm going to attempt to go about this in a different way from what I have heard people share. Okay, so the door opened, and that means I come into a meeting. And he stood there, fresh-skinned and glowing. And I see people around me at the meeting, and they have something that I don't know what they have. And then there is something about their eyes. There is something, there is hope in their eyes. And he was inexplicably different. And what is it different? This place, this is not like all the other places that I've gone to lose weight. So what had happened? And now I'm curious, and I'm saying, wait a minute, you got me here. You got me in this program because something is different. So the next paragraph, I pushed a drink across the table. That means if I'm in a place where people are going to hand me a plate of stuff that I like, and he's refusing it, and I'm refusing, I don't want to eat it, and disappointed but curious, like what's going on here? These people, they're not eating what we used to eat together. And then curious, I wonder what got into the fellow. And now my imagination is really at its highest point. What is going on here? He wasn't himself. So these people are not like what I used to be like. And come, what this is all about. So now I'm so curious. I can't wait to hear everything. And then finally, I'm asking about it, and then I've got an answer. I've got religion. So what does religion have to do with all my losing weight, for crying out loud? Because I'm going to make this short now. I am today in my heart as I am in my mind. I am today physically in my heart as I am in my mind. Today, there is no, it's all correlated in one. And that is what the difference is today. Thank you, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Leah S. Amanda R., please go ahead.
Good morning. This is Amanda R., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Maine. And one of the sentences in this reading stood out to me is something I've heard from people on outreach calls. I've experienced myself, and I thought I'd try to offer a little suggestion from experience. It says, I pushed a drink across the table. He refused it. And, you know, those people who are abstinent, whether they're in the process of recovery or already recovered, this is going to happen. We're going to be in places where people offer us stuff. Sometimes they push it at us. Sometimes it's just there. But people, I think people take it as an insult when we don't accept this stuff sometimes. And I've found what works for me, what's been helpful for me in those situations, is to just simply say, no, thank you. I found it doesn't agree with me. And usually there comes up with another reason why I should take it. And I say, no, thank you. It doesn't agree with me. And are you serious? You really don't eat this stuff? No, thank you. It doesn't agree with me. And, you know, there can be 1,001 reasons people give me why I should eat it. And sometimes I fall into the trap of thinking, well, because they gave me a different reason why I should eat it, I need to come up with a different way of saying no. And in fact, I don't. It's really okay for me to be who I am, to politely but definitely say no. And, and just to realize it's not that big of a deal. People will forget it pretty quickly and move on. And, I just let it go. And that's my experience in that situation. And I pass.
Thank you, Amanda R. Larry K., please go ahead.
Hey, Kathy, can you hear me okay?
I can, thanks.
Okay. I didn't know if you heard me before. Larry K., recovered compulsive reader from Chicago. So, Abby comes in, and he's fresh-skinned and glowing, and he talks about getting religion. I would have run for the hills. I remember hearing about people who, you know, and I would read about people who would not you know, take various medications that could cure them and so forth, because they would pray and they would do all these different things. And I thought, are you crazy? What's the matter with you? I still think they're crazy. Not necessarily true. But what I would say is that's kind of the sentiment that I carried when I was presented with this notion of somehow religion or spirituality was going to solve this problem that could not be solved in any other way. I thought, that's nuts. Absolutely nuts. And the only thing I would tell someone today is, I don't know if it's going to solve your problem. I just know that I work some simple steps, spiritual in nature. I worked these steps. Eventually, I was beaten into a state of reasonableness, and I just said, heck with it. I'm going to work these steps in sequence, 1 through 12, and prove that it's a bunch of hooey. Here's the thing. The obsession was eradicated. It's gone. That's my reality. I don't know what your reality is, but that's my reality. And here's the funny thing. I did not anticipate that. I did not expect that. On the contrary. See, I'm a man of science. I do not necessarily buy into that kind of, that notion that God was the answer. I just worked some simple steps that resulted in a change in me. And one of the changes was that obsession was lifted, gone. And you know what? It's never returned. I don't know what happened to me. I'm just telling you it happened as the result of these steps. If it didn't happen as the result of these steps, I don't know how it happened. If there's some other way that you can offer that it happened, I put the food down thousands of times and it never happened. Only when I worked through these steps in sequence, as laid out in the big book, followed the instructions, the obsession was lifted. I cannot deny that. That happened. So that's what I'm going with. With that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Larry K. Leah M., please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Kathy. Disappointed but curious, I wondered what had got into the fellow. He wasn't himself. You know, I think about the identification process that's so, vital in our program and so unique. I mean, here's Bill. He's receiving a visit from his old friend, a former drinking buddy, who, you know, has found a way to stay sober. Bill is curious. He's not going to like the message. You know, his mind is going to snap shut after hearing it. But the identification process is so important because Bill knew Ebby and he knew how Ebby drank. And he knew if Ebby was staying sober, something had occurred. He wasn't himself. And that is, you know, what we, offer today when we speak to a newcomer. When we talk to a newcomer, we're instructed to share what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. When we talk to the newcomers, we're living proof that some power, something greater than human power, is working in our lives. And whether the newcomer likes it or not, just like Bill is initially not going to like the message, we're living proof that something has changed us. And, you know, the big book says we have recovered and have been given the power to help others. I have absolutely no interest in power or personal success or recognition, but I have enormous interest and an obligation and a responsibility in having influence. Not power hungry in the least, but God uses recovered people to touch the lives of compulsive overeaters. I'm necessary, but I'm not sufficient in any change that a person makes, but I can be a catalyst. And that's what this reminds me of, is the importance of the identification. That's why, you know, I don't come on the line, retelling stories about, you know, my marriage and the ups and downs and excitement and challenges of raising a very large family. I'm an expert on the disease that I've recovered from because nobody really knows what it's like to be a compulsive overeater except a compulsive overeater. Nobody knows more about recovery from compulsive overeating than a recovered compulsive overeater. A recovered compulsive overeater has a stronger message of hope to take to other compulsive overeaters than anyone else. If you got a toothache, you're not going to your local cardiologist. You know, so everything we do as a recovered person and everything that we share on this line has a potential and opportunity to bring hope and light and perhaps even recovery to another compulsive overeater who is still suffering. And I'm grateful for this process and this program. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Leah. Hoodie R, please go ahead.
Hi, Kathy. Hey, this is Hoodie. Am I being heard?
Yes.
Hi. I'm Hoodie from Israel, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. And I was sort of thinking also on that paragraph, disappointed but curious. I wondered what had gotten into that fellow. He just wasn't. He wasn't himself. There was something different about him. I mean, yes, but identifying. And I just remember when the door opened, when I went into that first live OA meeting room, and I saw there were people there, and I'm like, what are you people doing there? And they were so happy and lively, and there was something there. There was something on their faces. They were glowing with a special glow of what they're doing. And I see this lineup of all these recovered fellows, and I was like, I wanted what they had. And then they went about sharing what it was like, what happened, and what it was like now. And I was like, I really identified in with what they were sharing, and to see the people and to see it in their eyes that they were really serious, that this is a serious disease, this allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind. And then they were giving clear-cut directions of how to go about to have this psychic change sufficient to bring about recovery. And I think of, you know, here, like, what's this all about? And they explained it. Clear-cut, you know, yes, to put down the food, but I didn't even know where to start. I didn't understand. I could have been doing anything. And they just looked me straight in the eye and said, yes, I've got a religion. I got a personal set or institutionalized system of religious idea, attitudes, beliefs, and practices. And they shared with me what it was like. They shared that group of principles and discipline that if I wanted what they had, I follow and do what they did. And, of course, I grabbed on exactly, clear-cut. That's how I got to put down the food, following their clear-cut directions and working the steps as if my life depended on it. Yes, I've got religion today. I needed a new mind. My mind led me to chaos, to depression, to doom and gloom. Today, I am grateful that a power greater than myself entered within me, sent me to so many different Ebbies, and finally I had that willingness to surrender and take that step and say, I had enough. I'm ready to do whatever you tell me to do. And I'm grateful for this new mind, this new attitude shift in my thinking into a more God-centered mind. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Hoodie R. Vasa O, please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Kathy, for your service. Grateful recovering compulsive overeater calling from Florida. And we are all Abbeys trying to pass it on that we have been so freely given in this program. And I did have my Abbey, my first Abbey that brought me in the program. And I had her for about a week before I came to my first meeting. And thank God the first meeting was not in a church because I would have just ran out, you know. A lot of mixed feelings about God. I did grow up in a communist country. I was taught in school there's no God, you know. And, of course, I wanted to believe my friends, my teachers, everybody else, you know. And a lot of confusion. But again, I'm so grateful I have that disease of compulsive overeating, you know, that I heard other messages, you know, when I came in the program. And I really didn't want to hear the word God, you know. I was afraid. You know, I also heard God was punishing God. So my first couple of meetings were in the basements, not in churches. They were in hospitals or buildings, different places. And then I was brought into a church basement. But by then I had heard stories from the other people before I came to the church basement, you know. So I just, you know, identifying, I felt like I'm not alone, you know. And people were telling their stories, you know, how they were when they went to the food, when they were in the food, and what had happened to them once they surrendered and once they found the solution, the allergy, the mental obsession, and working the 12 steps. I was just so sick and tired of being sick and tired. And even I remember saying, well, I don't care, even if they're saying about God now, about higher power, I'm just going to surrender anyway because I'm going to just die. So, you know, at least, you know, maybe there's a chance for me to survive this horrible disease. And, yeah, it was different way, you know, coming to this program, different way of thinking than the way I was thinking before. And I'm just so grateful. You know, it's just a beautiful program. So grateful for the solution and to pass it on to other people. When I, you know, losing the weight and, you know, things were changing my life and people were noticing those things in me. And they said, you look different. You're different, you know. Well, we are all, you know, when we come in recovery, we start working the program, you know, we look, of course, to me, number one, the sign was losing the weight, and that's what I wanted to do for 25 years of my life, lose the weight. Finally, it happened, you know. There was a big change in my physical part and then of emotional and spiritual. Thank you and for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you, Vasa O. Rivka K., please go ahead. Rivka,
This is Rivka A. from Israel, a recovered compulsive overeater speaking, and thank you so much for your service. Good morning, everyone. I just want to share a little bit and reflect on the sentence, I pushed a drink across the table. How forceful and how pushy that is. Can you imagine that Bill in the early days was a pusher with alcohol? And now in this story, you know, sooner or later, he's going to have this dramatic change of heart. But in this particular instance, this forceful pushiness of putting this drink across the table, he had no consideration or thoughtfulness or thoughts of Ebby's welfare at stake. He never gave it a thought. There was that selfishness on Ebby's part, I mean, on Bill's part, because he was in the depths of his drinking insanity. And, you know, it takes a change of heart through the process of working these steps and continuing to work the steps of this program. We just can't on our own be successful at this. We just can't do this stuff on our own. We can't take these steps without the help of the God of our own understanding. Ebby says, I've got religion. Well, it's amazing he didn't say, I've got God. That's interesting. But nevertheless, Bill had in his mind to recapture the spirit of the old days. I mean, misery does love company. You know, and it takes a willingness and a change of heart, change of thought process to be willing to put down that first drink. And, you know, until we hit our bottom with the food, can we even be useful and productive with another compulsive overeater? So I'm grateful today that I don't have this urge to go into the food, to chase after it and fear of it. So, you know, it's all about our thinking and how our life is at the beginning of the day and at the end of day. And are we truly honest with ourselves and what we're doing and what we represent? And I thank God for this program and that it does work if we work it. And with that, I pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rivka K. A. Thank you. Okay, it's now time for us to close this meeting. Thank you to everyone who has shared. I want to mention that we already have a share ID number for today's meeting. It is 9650. Thank you, Leah M., for that. We will now, please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following this closing. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Hoodie R., would you please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Certainly. Thank you again, Kathy Kay, and I'm still Hoodie R., recovered compulsive overeater in Israel. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.